He was also the wealthiest person in the world, ruling over a massive kingdom during an unprecedented time of peace. Solomon sets out to find fulfillment under the sun by trying to find meaning in pleasure, laughter, alcohol, folly, building projects, and the pursuit of personal interest, as well as in amassing slaves, gold and silver, singers, and a huge harem to fulfill his sexual desires. The more Solomon had, the more he was tempted to indulge. His indulgence led to sin, and his sin brought misery. Solomon's conclusion of this grand experiment was, all was vanity. Depends on your translation, it may read futility or meaningless, and there was no profit under the sun. So even with every resource at his disposal, none of these things could satisfy. Randy Alcorn says the book of Ecclesiastes is the most powerful expose of materialism ever written. And he gives an example of Ecclesiastes 5:10, which says in the NIV, "Whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income." So money itself is never the answer. What we need is a radically different perspective on money and a genuine opportunity to do something with it that will make our lives meaningful instead of meaningless. At the core of dissatisfaction is the focus of our pursuit. When searching for the core of Solomon's pursuit in Ecclesiastes 1:12 through 2:11, a few specific words stick out. In these 18 verses, Solomon refers to his own desires, his own work, and his own effort. I use the New American Standard Bible and got, he used the word I 28 times, me 5 times, my 14 times, and myself 6 times, for a total of 53 times referring to himself. If you use a different translation, you may get those a little bit different, but that's what I got with the New American Standard. Any questions? Comments? Zach, are y'all having trouble getting baby formula? No? Okay. So, all right, we're going to do this. Who would like to read Ecclesiastes 1, 12 through 18? 12 through 18.
The preacher was king over Israel in Jerusalem, and I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. This grievous task God has given to the sons of man, by which they may be exercised. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and indeed all is vanity and grasping for the wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be numbered. I communed with my heart, saying, look, I have attained greatness, and I have gained more wisdom than all who were before me in Jerusalem. My heart has understood great wisdom and knowledge, and I set my heart to know wisdom, and to know madness and folly. I perceived that this also is grasping for the wind. For in such wisdom is much grief, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow.
Okay, thanks, Connie. Who'd like to read verses 1 through 11 of chapter 2?
I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good. But that also proved to be meaningless. Laughter, I said, is madness. And what does pleasure accomplish? I tried cheering myself with wine and embracing folly. My mind still guided me with wisdom. I wanted to see what was good for people to do under the heavens during the few days of their life. I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself, I planted vineyards, I made gardens and parks, I planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs to water groves and flourishing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had other slaves who were born in my house. I also owned more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem before me. I amassed silver and gold for myself and the treasures of kings and provinces. I acquired male and female singers and a harem as well, the delights of a man's heart. I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. In all this, my wisdom stayed with me. I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my labor, and this was the reward for all my toil. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done, and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun.
Okay, thanks, Deborah. Do you notice how many times I was used? I mean, it's almost in every verse and sometimes multiple times in a verse. So what position did Solomon hold to authorize and empower him to write and make these observations and teachings? He was king, exactly. Yeah, king over Israel and Jerusalem. And where did we see that statement before? Maybe like last week? Yeah, in verse 1 of chapter 1 is where he first says that. Then he repeats it again in 12. Were you going to say something, David? Okay. So what great task did Solomon set his mind and convince himself? Verse 13.
Studying and exploring.
All right, studying and exploring by wisdom. What else?
In verse 3, he says, you know, what would be good for people to do the few days of their life?
Okay. But here he's talking about studying and searching out by wisdom everything that is done under heaven. Why would he have said this? Why was he saying that? What's the last part of verse 13 says? Say.
Burden God laid on man.
Yeah, it's a task which God has given to the sons of men to be afflicted with. New American Standard. Anybody have a translation says something that says it a little bit different?
What a heavy burden God has laid on mankind.
Okay, that's NIV?
Yeah.
Okay. So having seen the works done under the sun, what did he conclude in 14 and 15? Again, I'm sorry, Marie?
Chasing after the wind.
Chasing after the wind? But what else?
Meaningless.
It's meaningless. New American says vanity. Some translations say vapor. So why did he come to this conclusion? Why did he come to the conclusion that everything is vanity, meaningless, or vapor?
Most of what he was doing was self-centered.
Well, that's part of it, yeah. Yeah. That's a big part of it, maybe.
A man cannot satisfy.
Okay.
So, Lanny, you said this last week, I believe. No one really remembers.
Exactly. They don't remember. Yeah.
A few generations, and it's meaningless. It's forgotten.
Yeah. Yeah. And one point is, and we talked about this last week, nothing on earth will last, right? It will all go away at some point, sometimes sooner than others. But if you're visiting with us, if you have a comment or a question, just feel free to jump in. So if you're not visiting with us, you can do that also. Yeah, I think that helped. And as we dissect this a little bit more, we'll see that all this stuff he had, he realized wasn't anything to it in the long run. Jared?
I just think we told the other parts of the Bible, there is no satisfaction here, there is true satisfaction.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. It's all temporary, whatever satisfaction we have here on earth. So what did he acknowledge he had attained in verse 16? If he says all of this is under everything under the sun is vanity or meaningless, what did he acknowledge that he had attained?
I'm the smartest one in the road.
Huh?
I'm the smartest one in the road.
Yeah.
I studied this.
Yeah.
There's nothing here.
Right. That's sort of where Zach was going, I think. So yeah. Yeah, great wisdom and understanding is what I had written down. That's the latter part of verse 16. So from what is there much frustration besides teenagers? From what is there much frustration, or where does much frustration come from? Okay.
He said that entire parameter on both ends of the spectrum and all through the middle is meaningless.
Okay. Anybody else have something?
I just think he's feeling stuck. It's like, where do I go from here? I've got it all.
You've got it all, yeah.
I understand his frustration. He's frustrated. What do I do now? I got it all.
So got it all, here. Yeah. Shane, do you have your hand up?
Well, yeah, I was going to say on top of that, he accomplished all the things that men are supposed to accomplish. He did all the great things men are supposed to do. And then at the end of the day, he has the wisdom to look back and he says, it's all
yeah.
So he's frustrated. There's a frustration there because you work so hard to attain, and then he looks back on what he's attained and he said, well, in the grand eternal scheme, what does this mean? Nothing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So you can sense a sense of frustration.
Yeah. That's what Connie was saying. Do what?
No fulfillment.
No fulfillment. John?
Just corroborating what's already been said, this is a diatribe. He's wound up and he's ventilating right now.
Yeah.
And he's saying that egomania and narcissism is not the path to happiness.
Exactly. Exactly. Kevin?
So what I read here is he concludes about two things that we value very much. He says, much wisdom, with much wisdom comes much sorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And something else we value, with more knowledge, more grief.
Exactly.
Ignorance is bliss.
Sometimes, exactly. Which brings me to the number 6. Regarding verse 18, Bible commentator Matthew Henry said, the more we know, the more we see of our own ignorance. So do you think this is a fair statement? Sometimes can we know too much? Or can we have too much knowledge?
I don't know that it's a matter of too much knowledge. It's just the more you know, the more you realize what you don't know.
What you don't know, yeah. Yeah.
What he would have done with Google.
Hey, what?
Done,
yeah, you should have Googled it, right? Marie?
Well, I just keep thinking the whole time that understanding that he prayed to God and God was going to give him anything he wanted, and he asked for one thing.
Yeah, wisdom.
And God was like, wow, that's really cool that you did that, so I'm also going to give you
all this other stuff. Yeah.
So when he describes himself, he's not exaggerating. Because God himself gave him, you know, all of that. And I just think it's a really cool book because I used to not at all, but I did. That too was meaningless. Anyway, because it's the soul is what matters. And these things are all, they're the other, and they're what most people seek, but that's the end, is that it's really about our soul and only God.
Mm-hmm. He would have bought.
Do what, John?
He would have bought Google.
Oh, yeah.
He was Google.
Yeah, even Queen of Sheba came to him to talk to him and get answers from him. So.
Hey,
yes, sir. Wayne?
The question is, how do you trust somebody like this when they made so many mistakes?
Well, you hope. They have learned from their mistakes so they can tell you what not to do.
And that's what part of his writing is.
Oh, yeah.
I've done everything you could possibly be done, and that was worthless for humans.
Yeah.
That was worthless.
Yeah.
Now turn to God.
Yeah. But do we get caught up in this trap?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we work 40, 50, 60 years, and like Gary said this morning, we retire, and we look around and says, okay, what now? You know, we're in the same boat sometimes, so it happens. I've got a similar story to yours, Gary, about physics. Mine was calculus. My senior year in college, I had to have calculus to graduate, so I had to do this, you know. But I took it first time, and my teacher, Sharon Paul, did you know Sharon, Ronnie and Sharon from Fort Deposit? Sharon liked me so much being in her class, she invited me to come back the next semester. She did, David, I promise.
No, because he wanted to pass it the first time.
I didn't pass it. That's actually it. I did not pass, so I had to take her the next time. Oh, really? Sharon wasn't like that. And they've actually visited here back before the oil thing. I used to visit every summer here, so I'd run into her sometimes. So anyway, and we've talked about the second part of C. Why or why not? Increasing knowledge results in increasing pain sometimes. So number 7, we're in chapter 2. What did Solomon decide to test out and what did he discover in verse 1? Yeah, he test pleasure, and what was his outcome? Or what did he discover?
Meaningless.
Yeah, it was meaningless as well.
It was meaningless as your perhaps.
Exactly. So, what did the teacher want to find out in verse 3? What was he actually looking for?
What's good for people to do?
Yeah. What's good? What can they do good? Or what should they be doing good? So in his search for pleasure, what sort of things did the preacher Solomon explore?
Everything.
But verses 2 and 3 names 3 things specifically.
Wine.
All right, what else?
Folly.
All right, wine and folly, and what else? Look at verse 2.
Laughter.
I thought laughter was the best of medicine or whatever.
Eat, drink, and be merry.
This is
exactly.
Maniacal laughter.
Okay. It's not. Yeah, was it Deborah? Did you just say eat, drink, and be merry? Is that what you said? Yeah, that's part of what he's talking about. Yeah. So what guided his heart during the course of his search? All right, the wisdom is what was guiding him, right? All this wisdom that he had accumulated was actually what was driving him. So look at number 11. We're going to look at verses 4, 5, and 6 if you want to be looking at it. What great projects did Solomon pursue? What did he pursue in verse 4?
Vineyards
and what else? Bob is over here saying it. Houses. He built houses, planted vineyards.
We also refer to those as palaces.
Oh yeah, they weren't. No, they were no Jim Walter house, that's for sure. Nobody knows what Jim Walter houses are? You don't know what a Jim Walter house is? Basically a prefab house they would bring in and throw up in about a day, but it lacked some stuff that you had to do yourself. It never was 100% complete. It was up to, I think, 90% is as much as they would do. And you would either have to put some paneling up or some trim up or something. It was cheaper. So, did anybody else not know what a Jim Walter house is? Was this just a South Alabama thing?
No.
Y'all have them in Georgia, didn't you?
Tennessee.
They have them down here too.
They have. I know they have. I knew some people that lived in one.
So.
Go for it. So no, to go back to Deborah's point, these are not small shacks. These are palaces that he has built. So verse 5, what does he do in verse 5? What project?
Gardens.
What else? Parks. And he planted what? Fruit trees.
In these parks, these are also a lot of times wild animal parks.
Like a zoo? Like what we know, an open zoo, not a cage zoo, but an open zoo. And verse 6, what did he make? Or what was his project?
Reservoirs, water.
Reservoirs, ponds of water.
Think about how much rain doesn't rain here.
And this was in the middle of the desert, yeah. Probably. Yeah. So why did he do the ponds of water?
Water
the trees, water the forest. So number 12, we're going to look at verses 7 and 8. What other possessions and delights did Solomon gain? In verse 7. Male, female slaves. What else? Large flocks and herds. And then verse 8, what did he accumulate? All right, silver and gold.
Treasures
of kings. What else?
Singers.
And what else? His harem. So the question, we commented, someone commented on this last week. If he was so wise and so smart, why did he have all these women that he had to deal, put up with? So, it's a...
I think at first he didn't realize it.
He didn't realize that they were a problem?
Yeah.
Maybe this was part of the wisdom of learning over time. So.
Plus in Solomon's case, the women, part of the women was about politics.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There's a certain part of this that's about making treaties and making agreements, and that involved, wives and all this kind of stuff. And so it's a much more complicated fabric than just some guy who's going out and getting married to everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the same thing with all these flocks and herds and all that. They would give flock. That was like their money back then. I mean, their, what they used to.
The women were not wives.
Concubines.
Yeah.
Concubines. I didn't say wives. I said women.
No, I know. But,
We sometimes think of them as wives.
You're talking about not realizing that, well.
We had 300 wives and 600 concubines.
Yeah.
Still.
Do what, Shane?
I said he had every kind of woman. He had lots of wives.
Yeah.
And even then, the wives were not as equal with the king. We know.
No, there's. Yeah, there's.
Yeah, we can study the story back. Who was it? I'm sorry. Esther. Thank you. Esther.
Oh, yeah.
That risked being killed for standing before the king. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Was not an equal partnership.
So what did Solomon accomplish in verse 9? Out of all this stuff he accumulated, what did he accomplish?
Meaningless.
No, look at verse 9.
Greater than anyone.
Yeah, he was greater than all who were in Jerusalem before him.
That's because he owned all the women.
No, that's not the only thing he had, but he accumulated more than anyone else had before him. So how does Solomon describe his pursuit of pleasure in verse 10? Do what, Pat? Did you say something? What did you say?
If it feels good, do it. And everything he saw or thought about, he did. He thought it would feel good.
Whatever your eyes desired and pleasure his heart wanted. So what was his reaction to this great accumulation of wealth in verse 10?
Nothing to begin with.
Oh, look at it.
Well, my Bible doesn't talk about
it. He took the line and what
he meant. Yeah, he rejoiced.
It was in his labor, not in his wealth.
What was his reaction to this great accumulation of wealth?
This was the reward.
It was a reward. He rejoiced. He was happy.
Or was he?
Well, verse 11.
She said,
Yeah. So this brings us to number 16. So if Solomon pursues whatever his eyes desired and any pleasure of his heart wanted, and he rejoices in his labor, what conclusion about the pursuit of pleasure did he make in verse 11?
Meaningless.
He found them vanity. What else does it say?
Time says nothing to be gained under the sun.
All right.
King James reads vexation of the spirit.
The what of the spirit?
Vexation.
Okay. New American says grasping for wind with no profit under the sun. So if you had to put that in Southern slang, how would you answer that? Not worth it. It's just not worth it in the long run. So why do you think pleasure fails to give meaning to life?
That's where you feel the whole thing.
Exactly. So, Don, did you say something?
I said it's fleeting.
Fleeting? Okay. What else?
This all reminds me of that verse that says, if you gain the whole world, so
yeah.
Profiting.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's exactly it.
One of the great theologians of the day, I want to say it was somewhere between 600 and 800 AD, was one of the first times we have the reference to there's a God-sized hole in all our spirits.
Yeah, yeah. And that can be a big hole, too, at times.
Exactly.
So, any questions or comments? Huh?
You're good. You're done.
2 minutes. We're gonna be about five over before it's said and done. Anybody have any comments, questions? All right. Look at your conclusion. One would think that Solomon was one happy man. He did whatever he wanted, whenever he wanted, for as long as he wanted. But when we disregard God as we pursue pleasure and worldly satisfaction, we can sum it up with one word, vanity. So, any final comments or questions? All right, next week we'll look at Ecclesiastes 2, verses 12 through 26, which is basically the end of chapter 2.